The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, November 30th, 2020.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do. Because the woman in your life is you.
Welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your Holtz. I'm your Holtz. I'm your host. With me at the board is my friend, my partner, and engineer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
What a delightful day here in Sonoma County. And here we are once again, Monday morning, the last Monday of the month, November 30th. I cannot believe it. I can't believe Halloween is past. I can't believe Thanksgiving is past. Well, I have a very interesting show this morning. Joining me on the phone this morning will be Dr. Harriet Fraud. Dr. Fraud is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist who has a practice in New York City. She's a well-published author and writes about the pressures on families and the economics of the United States of America. She is also a regular guest of Dr. Richard Wolff and his show Economic Update, which is on KBBF 89.1 FM every Tuesday from 11 to 12 p.m. It's a program you don't want to miss. For this show, we will be talking about the recent election, its impact, and future considerations. Man, I'll tell you something. There's a lot to talk about when it comes to this election. I mean, I feel like I've been on a roller coaster ever since the election happened. I mean, all the lawsuits and all the propaganda and all the, oh my goodness, making us all feel insecure, frustrated, frightened, you name it. But we're coming to the end. It looks like many of the states have ratified the election, have what do they say that?
They've certified it.
They certified the election. And it looks like we do have a president-elect Joe Biden and a vice president-elect Kamala Harris. Boy, that's really exciting when you think about it. At last, a woman's in that position. I mean, it's just amazing to me. Well, this is the last Monday of the month, and we will be doing the pledge. I have a few announcements to make. A few, you know, I love history. You know, one of the beauties of doing this show is you get to find out all the different things that happened, not only today, but all the things that happened yesterday. Well, on November 30th, 1782, very interesting, the Treaty of Paris ended the Revolutionary War between Great Britain and the United States, recognized American independence, and established borders for the new nation. After the British defeat at Yorktown, peace talks in Paris began in April 1782 between Richard Oswald, representing Great Britain, and the American peace commissioners, Benjamin Franklin, John Jay, and one of my favorites, John Adams. The American negotiators were joined by Henry Lawrence 2 days before the preliminary articles of peace were signed on November 30th, 1782. The Treaty of Paris, formally ending the war, was not signed until September 3rd, 1783. The Continental Congress, which was temporarily situated in Annapolis, Maryland at that time, ratified the Treaty of Paris January 14th, 1784. So here they signed the treaty, and it takes 2 years, all the rigmarole they had to go through. But that's when the United States of America became the United States of America. What a proud moment that must have been for all our forefathers. And they laid, you know, they laid a document for us to live by. Not a perfect document, but every time we look at it, every time we work with it, there's always improvements made. I mean, when they first signed the treaty, women could not get to vote. People were in slavery. All kinds of things are happening that are not happening today. So we've come a long way, but we still have a long way to go. And I think during the last 4 years, I think our democracy has been tested. We have been tested as a nation. And I know for some of us, one of the hardest things is to accept the fact that we have a woman vice president who is not only just a woman, but a woman of color. I mean, it really is a historic moment for all of us. And I have my fingers crossed that it works out well and that Kamala comes across and does the things and supports the events and the ideas that so long ago the women at Seneca Falls tried to bring about. We thought when we get the vote, we're going to have peace. But it's been 100 years and we're still warring. So there's a lot to think about. So happy birthday, I guess, to the signing of the treaty that made us the United States of America. Well, today, on November 28th, which was 2 days ago, in 1881, the first organizational meeting was held for the predecessor group of the American Association of University Women, AAUW. So I want to do a shout out to them, wish them a happy birthday. And you know, there are several chapters in Northern California. So here we are. It's about, over 100 years. I mean, almost 200 years here. And this organization is still going strong. And the most exciting thing is more and more and more women are getting educated and coming to the forefront. And this election was amazing when it comes to the amount of women that ran. And I want to do a shout out once again to Natalie Rogers, who is on the Santa Rosa City Council. She fought a hard race, and boy, she had to sit and wait while they counted every single vote. And to our voter of registration, oh my God, here in Sonoma County, congratulations. What she went through is just amazing, how everything was set up and ran as smoothly as it did. The thing that is kind of surprising to me, and if anybody can give me an answer, I have been trying to find people who voted for Trump to explain to me exactly what their motivation was. You know, I really don't understand it. And also when I'm watching all the things that are going on around about the vote and about the election and all the ideas of insecurity that are being planted in our minds, what was your motivation? You know, what inspired you to vote for this man? I want to know, and I don't say that critically. I say that with a open mind and heart to try to understand, because once we know what the issues are, we can all work together. So if you know of anybody that could, satisfy that, maybe even come on the show, why don't you email me at elaine@womenspaces.com. That's elaine@womenspaces.com, and give me the contact information. Well, like I always say, our history is our strength, and happy birthday. Today, on November 30th, Mary Lasker worked with the Birth Control Federation of America in 1939, which later was renamed Planned Parenthood in 1942, lobbied for federal funding for the National Cancer Institute and the National Heart Institute. Well, happy birthday, Mary Lasker, another woman that came to the front and did something very, very worthwhile. Planned Parenthood, an amazing organization. And, you know, folks, when you think about it, especially you folks out there that are you call yourselves pro-life, you're against abortion, Planned Parenthood is very important. If you plan parenthood, you don't have to have abortion. Birth control pills are very important. It's a way that we control populations, and it's a way that you prevent all these horrible things that you're fighting, like you say, that are happening, that you're fighting against. Well, this is a solution. Support Planned Parenthood. So that was November 30th, 1900. She passed away in 1994. That was Mary Lasker. And then, wow, one of my favorite people in the world was born November 30th, 1924, and she passed away in 2005. Shirley Chisholm. Oh, Shirley Chisholm. What a woman she was. The first African-American congresswoman. She was a Democrat for New York. She served from 1969 to 1983. She was the first woman and the first African-American. Hold on, let me change this page here. The first African-American Democratic presidential nominee. And you know, she received 151 delegate votes at the Democratic Convention in 1972. what courage that woman had to stand up and say, I'm going to run for president. You know, it's really interesting if, for my listeners out there, I really suggest there's two women that I think are so important to read about. The first one, and we're going to talk about the New Deal and all this other good stuff that happened during the 30s when Franklin Delano Roosevelt was elected. But one of the women that you really need to understand is Frances Perkins, an amazing woman. She actually was one of the authors of the New Deal and very influential to President Roosevelt. And then the second woman that I would recommend that you read about, well, there's actually three. And the second woman I would recommend that you read about is Shirley Chisholm. I mean, she left a legacy that we can all be proud of. You know, she was the first African-American woman to do so many things. And, you know, for women of color to come forward in the time that she came forward, that was quite an event. And then the third person that I just is my all-around hero, and that's Ida B. Wells. Why do I say she's my hero? Number one, she was an African-American woman that took such risks. She was the first human being to start writing about the horror of lynching. You know, she went into the South and wrote, and had to come in and write these stories and leave. Her life was threatened. I mean, so many things happened, but yet she persisted and move forward. So Ida B. Wells, one of my heroes, that's for sure. Well, lots to think about, but you know, that's what Women's Space is about. You know, sometimes I think too much. I mean, these last few months have been brutal, especially around the mask issue. You know, it's really interesting. Thanksgiving, I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. And you know, I call it Thankful Day. I don't call it Thanksgiving because I'm kind of in tune with what the Native Americans, when they celebrate, and they've been going out to Alcatraz Island every year for the past, I think, about 20 years. And what's so interesting, about this year is they did it two ways. They allow, let's see, the gathering was sponsored by and coordinated by the International Indian Treaty Council is for the past 40 years. That's amazing. I thought it was 20, the past 40 years. And then the update was is that the event on Alcatraz Island did take place, but what ended up happening, they did it two different ways. They Zoomed, they did a Zoom, and they also were on another radio station, KPFA 94.1, also recorded them, which was very, very, very interesting. And the gathering took place, of course, on Thanksgiving, November 28th, and it was at Alcatraz Island. And it's really important. It's really important to honor our indigenous brothers and sisters for what they contributed to these United States of America. And I call it un-Thanksgiving, but I call it a thankful day. Because it is a time when we can get together, we can look at our family. I mean, this year was very different. I mean, you're not going to believe this, but I actually cooked for the first time in 20 years because I'm the one in the family that always brings the salad. So I show up, everybody's made the turkey, the dressing, all the other stuff, and I show up with the salad. And let me tell you something, the salad gets the least applause, even though it's the healthiest thing on the table. And this year, believe it or not, I cooked a Thanksgiving dinner for me and Ken and for our dear friend Keith and in my toaster oven. It was quite a challenge. And a special shout out to my neighbors, Nancy and Harold Rogers. What they did was they sent us over a plate that they made, and they owned the Red Rose Catering Company. And what's so amazing is that Ken and I had their dinner the next day, and I said, wow, I'm not a Thanksgiving chef, that's for sure. But thank you, Harold and Nancy. It was a wonderful, wonderful treat. And you know, one of the things that we heard, what we read in the paper today is that they're suggesting that people that had family gatherings, that they might get testing to see if they have the virus, just as a precaution. And also right now we're in some real serious issues around the virus, so it is recommended that you do limit your group gatherings. That's number one. And also wear a mask, keep washing your hands, and distance, social distancing. And I know it's hard and I know it's challenging, but you know something? It's saving lives. And right now I think we're up to 266,000 people in the United States have died, and we're up to 13 million cases. And all this could have been somewhat prevented. Very, very sad. Well, on a positive note, let's do the pledge. I'm going to do the pledge, and then after that, we're going to have a wonderful, wonderful song called We the People, and then we're going to bring Harriet Fraud on. So if you're driving your car, just relax, just listen, you know, keep driving, you know, you don't want to close your eyes or anything. If you're at home, find yourself a comfortable chair and just take a deep breath. And I'm going to ask Ken to join me. I mean, here we are. We're just alone in the studio. I mean, we've been coming here every Monday since March, Ken. Can you believe that? I mean, it's just amazing. So let's do the pledge. I will say the first line, and then I will repeat, and then if you could repeat after me. Here we go. The Women's Spaces Pledge. My self-esteem
does not depend
on anything
outside of me.
My self-esteem
depends
on my relationship
with myself
and my higher power. Wow, doesn't that feel good, Ken?
It does.
My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. My self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power. You know, that's a pretty powerful pledge. And I want to do a shout out to my beautiful granddaughter and grandson, because they're the one that inspired. They inspired that pledge. I said it to them over and over and over as they grew up. And I'm telling you, folks, it really helps. I recommend you do it at least once a day. I do it about 5 or 6 times a day, particularly when I'm on the radio. Before I come on, I always do it at least 2 times. I say to myself, Elaine, your self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of you. Your self-esteem depends on your relationship with yourself and your higher power. And then I come on the air, and here I am. Here I am, Sparkle Plenty in person. Remember those Sparkle Plenty dolls? I remember that. My Auntie Dodo bought me one. It was really, really wonderful. Well, we're going to take a musical break now. And I found this song by Chris Williamson, which I thought was very interesting. It's called We the People. And it's kind of the story of the struggle that we have gone through and what we're going through right now. And when we come back, I will be talking with Dr. Harriet Fraud, who is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in practice. I'm going to be calling her in New York City. Dr. Fraud has become a regular on my show, and she's also a regular guest on Richard Wolff's Economic Update. And I'm very honored to have her on, and we'll be talking about the history and the implications of everything that's happened on this election, particularly around economics, the climate change, the pandemic, and also what it means to have a woman as a vice president. So let's go ahead and listen to We the People.
We struck up a conversation there at Grand Central Station, just two women waiting for a train. She was in her 60s, just ahead of my mid-50s. I was from the West, she from Maine. I'd been looking at the picture of the peace march in the paper. Wished I had risen to my feet from my despair. When she leaned across and pointed to the front page of the Times, and she said to me, "You know what? I was there. We the people stand in the hard rain pouring down. We'll not be prisoners of war. We will not cast the stone. We the people stand in peace persuaded. We'll harvest not the dragon's teeth, no, no. Not the dragon's teeth, no, not the dragon's teeth that they have sown. wish I had been. I'm just not a brave, bold person. I've never marched or spoken up, to say the least. Now terror falls upon the land. I'm so afraid to take a stand. How do you know if you are brave enough for peace? She turned to me and said, oh, miss, I haven't always been like this. I used to be real quiet, just like you. But since the 9/11, I've been thinking less of heaven and more about this little planet spinning blue. We the people stand in the hard rain pouring down. We'll not be prisoners of war. We will not cast the stone. We the people stand in peace persuaded. We'll harvest not the dragon's teeth. No, no, not the dragon's teeth. No, not the dragon's teeth that they have sown. You see, on that day my world came down. I lost my child, my boy, my son. I lost my mind, I watched it break in two. I sailed around the world in grief, full of rage, with no relief, until the homeboys started sewing dragon's teeth. I sailed around the world in grief, full of rage, with no relief, until the homeboys started sewing dragon's teeth. It was then I had the notion to lead a peace march on the ocean. 200 round the ship, we marched in peace. And something happened to me out there. I felt such peace come out of nowhere as we sang the news that we shall live in peace. Then our trains rolled in on 2 and 3. And as she stepped aboard, she said to me, you can become the change that you would wish to see. Conceive inside your heart, you hold the key. And as she waved goodbye, her words came back to me. We the people stand in the hard rain pouring down. We'll not be prisoners of war. We will not cast the stone. We the people stand in the peace persuaded. The dragon's teeth, no, no, not the dragon's teeth, no, not the dragon's teeth that they have sown. Are you brave enough for peace? Brave enough for peace? Brave enough, brave enough.
Oh, my goodness. We the people. You know, I found something the other day on the internet and Facebook. There are the three C's in life: choice, chance, and change. You must make the choice, take the chance, if you want anything in life to change. And that's by Unknown. Well, welcome back. You are listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. For you just joining in, you are listening to KBBF 89.1 FM Calistoga, Santa Rosa. I want to remind my listeners that the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, and Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You are listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest. Joining me on the phone from New York, and it's his honor to introduce her, is Harriet Fraud. Good morning, Harriet. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
I'm so glad to be here.
Well, how is it you're calling all the way? We're talking to you all the way in New York. What's the weather like in New York today?
Well, I'm in Massachusetts, so it's even colder than New York. But it's cold and rainy.
Oh, you're in Massachusetts now. Well, now we're really getting into the States. Well, welcome, welcome, welcome. You know, Harriet, before we begin, I would like to tell my listeners just a little bit about you. Is that okay?
Sure.
Dr. Harriet Fraud is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in private practice in New York City. She speaks regularly and writes about the intersecting crisis in U.S. relationships, personal life, politics, and economics. She is a founding member of the Second Women's Wave movement and has remained an activist for her entire life. She appears regularly on the radio for Economic Update, the Juliana Farler Moni Shore, M.K. Mendoza, and Women's Spaces. Her latest written work appears in Knowledge Class in Economics, Marxism Without Guarantees, in Routledge 2019. Today we will be talking about the election, its impact, and solutions. Wow, that's a lot, huh, Harriet?
It is. Now, I have two podcasts, one with Juliana Forlano, Capitalism Hits Home Through Democracy at Work, or wherever you can get on it anywhere. And the other, it's on Apple Podcasts and everywhere else, called It's Not Just In Your Head, which I do with Max Golding. And it's about the real things that are outside at, rather than in your head, which the psychological world has to take notice of. So, you know, addiction is not just a personal problem. It's a social problem that impacts you personally. Anyway, I am very glad to be here, and I've been thinking a lot about the topic for today.
Well, let me just go through a little bit. First of all, I want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving, and also a happy Hanukkah, and Merry Christmas, and everything else, Happy New Year, and all the holidays that are coming up.
Same to you.
But before we talk about today's subject, which is the election, I'd like you to talk just a little bit about yourself. You know, talk about how, you know, I'm just trying to visualize you as a young woman, how you got involved with politics, and what do you find interesting, particularly now during these times, as the, what was the beginning of your activism?
Well, I think at the beginning of my real activism, the civil rights movement began, and people were sitting at lunch counters, and I was at college, and I was in Vermont, but a group of us went down to Woolworths and picketed in solidarity with the civil rights movement, and in which, you know, because we were outraged at the way lunch counters and everything else was segregated, and black people were marginalized and then condemned for being poor when they were excluded from good jobs. And so that was a real awakening. And then when the women's movement came around in the 60s, I read the Notes from the First Year, which was the first publication out in 1968, and I thought, we've got to do that. I've got to do that right here in New Haven where I lived. So I began with five friends of mine, and before about 6 months, we had outgrown the office that the Committee Against the War in Vietnam had given us, and we were up to 100 people in a meeting because we recognized that this had to be our time. Most of us were activists. I was an activist, too, against the war in Vietnam as well as in civil rights. But that touched me on a personal level and activated me on a whole other level.
You know,
all those forces combined.
You know, it's so interesting. As you talk, all of a sudden, my mind just goes back to all these years that we have been protesting and standing up and talking. And I mean, and it's just amazing. It's just endless. It's like an endless stream of growing up and trying to do the right thing and just looking at the world kind of coming together and falling apart all at one time as we're going through our lives. So that's really is amazing. Where did you get, you know, at those beginning stages, where did you get your courage, you know, your tenacity? I know for myself, when I first got involved, I remember the first march I went to for abortion, and there was a jar was thrown at me with an embryo, and right with my little girl, she was only about 7 years old, and I remember I was just shocked, and I was so frightened, but it didn't stop me. I kept moving on. And I had to do a lot of meditating, a lot of different things to have the courage to be able to continue on. Where did you get your courage?
I think from outrage. I think I wasn't thinking about me. I was so outraged at the situation. And look, in the early 1970s was a hopeful time. America was the most equal country in the whole developed world. Now we're the least egalitarian country in the whole developed world. However, you know, it was sheer anger at the injustice that somehow jumped me on my feet and into action. It was outrage. First at what was happening in the civil rights movement, then the fact that people were being sent to kill Vietnamese people with whom we really had no beef at all, and our money was being used to destroy people, and then that realizing that as a woman, I had suffered so much discrimination and so much gender ideological submission that I was outraged. So I think it was generally, it was just outrage.
Yeah, I think that's what motivates a lot of us. Even now, right now, the outrage. Like I'm thinking, you know, I put an appeal out at the beginning of the show as I asked, you know, there were 60,000 people here in Sonoma County that voted for President Trump. And I really want to get a handle on. I want to find out what was their motivation. What were they thinking? I mean, what are they hearing that I'm not hearing? What are they seeing that I'm not seeing? And it's very interesting. So let's get into the election here. You know, Joe Biden was elected president, and Kamala Harris, by the way, I met her personally, as vice president. And although Biden has won both the popular vote and the electoral votes, when you look at the results, it was not a landslide that was expected. I mean, there was a real landslide expected, and it didn't happen that way. Although he did get over 5 million votes ahead of Trump for the popular vote. What do you think motivated people to vote for Trump? Because the reason I asked that question first is because I'm trying to understand, and maybe through this conversation, trying to understand what is behind the thoughts with what is he presenting to the people that is so attractive?
Well, there's a few things I want to say. One is I think it was actually a landslide because with all the cheating and fraud that they committed, because they commit everything of which they accuse everyone else, Biden did get many more votes than were counted. However, all those 70 million people who voted for Trump had, of course, mixed motivations. But I think one of the things that I imagine is that, and this is the positive side, there's also a negative side, but the positive side is they keep being promised fair wages and equality, and they're not getting it. They voted for the same kind of policies, but in Brown, they didn't get it. Obama bailed out the banks. It didn't bail out the mortgage holders, black or white. Actually, blacks suffered even more because of his priorities. He had in one fell swoop, all of the Occupy movements were smashed and destroyed, and so that he protected the people at the top while making civil rights gains, while having an integrated cabinet, while having women on the cabinet. The economic policies that are destroying these people's lives are exactly the same. And I think people are outraged, and with the narrow band of choice of two capitalist parties with different tendencies, they chose the most angry, the most outraged, and someone who expressed their outrage, even though he betrayed them in every action. He expressed that they were being cheated. He expressed that a lot of the news was fake, and a lot of it is. The CIA has a lot to do with what's in our newspapers and the biased ways that our supposed enemies are presented. And so that I think they feel cheated and enraged, and so they go for the angriest, most destructive, outraged person who is not business as usual, and that was Trump, because business as usual has impoverished them. These are the small businesses who had their grocery store for generations, which is now Walmart. or their hardware store, which is now Walmart or Home Depot, or any of the small businesses that have been taken over. And these are the people who were told that America was a place where if you work hard, you can get ahead. Of course, if you're white and male, that was the subtext. Now they can't, even though they're white and in families headed by males. And they're very angry. And so they voted for the angriest, most destructive person who said he felt for them, even though he did the opposite.
Well, you know what you're saying then? What you're saying is those millions who voted for him, it's really a wake-up call for all of us that we need
it
to pay. We need to pay attention because, and rightfully so. I mean, even some of us, I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but a lot of people even voting for Biden were very hesitant. But they recognize that this is the alternative choice right now, and hopefully we can work with him. So it's kind of interesting. And how do you think, and then besides that, what about the possibility that maybe they were also voting because they didn't like the idea of a woman running, particularly a woman of color running for vice president?
Well, I think that was a factor, and I think for a lot of these people, and this is the negative side, there is this nefarious, you know, deadly whispering, if only blacks and women would go back into their place, everything would be like it used to be. And Trump gives a lot of hints of that the problem is uppity women and minorities. So some of them voted for Trump's racism because they're hearkening back to the more racist times of the 1950s. And early 60s, when women were more subordinate, and so were black people. And it's symbolically very important that a woman who is partly black and partly Asian, certainly minority, is the vice president. However, these people are angry. They think that having racial diversity and gender diversity means being cheated for the mass of people. Because as our country has been more sensitive to issues of race, even though the mass of poor people are poorer than when Obama came in, and much more sensitive to issues of gender, they're cheated. They can't get ahead. Their kids are doing worse than them. And so instead of suspecting that the problem is a capitalist problem, we have two capitalist parties. We need real choice. Real choice. The way they have in France or Germany or all the Scandinavian countries and most of Europe. Look, Portugal, which has a very successful government, is a combination of parties together. They united. Communist Party, the Socialist Party, and the Green Party. And they've done amazing things. Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, who's done amazing things, is a Socialist Labor Party candidate. But they had a choice of capitalism or socialism. We have two capitalist parties and two parties dependent on money to run from the richest people in the United States. And that's why none of them are running for taking the billionaires, leaving them each with $500 million, more than anybody should have. And let's say in Jeff Bezos's case, that would add $199 billion to the U.S. Treasury for programs we need. None of them are talking about redistributing the wealth.
Well, it's really,
if we had a real choice, people might go for that.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, you know, when you start talking about things, and the second portion of our show is going to be talking about some of the New Deal and how it can help right now with the situation that we're in. But I think the most important question that people need to ask themselves is, what am I afraid of? Why is we American citizens afraid to look at alternatives, to look at other ways of being? I mean, it's just interesting. Well, I want to go on to the next thing, and this is on a lot of people's minds. You know, with all these lawsuits going on, I mean, I can't believe it. There were 34 the last time that I listened, and they were all rejected. And I understand that a lot of the states have now, ratified, have what's the word we use again, Ken?
Certified.
Have certified Joe Biden as the president-elect.
Right.
But what do you think, what do you think is going to happen? Do you actually think that they're going to be able to get away with this, or do you think it's coming to an end? I mean, because one of the things that's happening, he keeps saying he's going to go to the Supreme Court. He's going to go to the Supreme Court. And it brings a lot of anxiety to people. So what is your thought in that area?
My thought is that since his cases are being thrown out as entirely capricious and unfounded, because he can scream fraud on television and at his rallies, but in the court of law, he does have to have some evidence, and there is none. And so I think the purpose of it is to disturb people, get a lot of his followers riled up, and sending money, because he has used our country as his own bank account, sending his children all over the world on their own businesses, for which we pay for the security detail, going to Mar-a-Lago instead of Camp David, which is local, spending $3.3 million every time he goes to Mar-a-Lago for a weekend, in playing golf at his own expensive golf courses, having his own hotel. He's used it as graft, and he needs that money coming in, because when he leaves, he has about a half a billion worth of lawsuits coming between the 26 women he sexually abused, between Deutsche Bank calling in his $340 million loan, and so on, and the fraud allegations and the tax evasions. And so he's got to raise money. And so I think some of this is creating a following so he can have a fund for 2024 reelection campaign for Trump, a fund for defend Donald Trump, and get people to send money, especially little people, because Stephen Schwartzman, who used to support him, said, no way. Sheldon Adelson, with all his casinos, and has said, uh-uh, no more.
Oh, you're
so
kidding.
His big donors have signed off. He wants money.
You know something.
And I think a lot of it is creating a big fuss, so he is embattled because he always has a grievance, and trying to get people to send money, which he'll pocket, just like Bannon did, pocketing the money for the Build the Wall Fund, where he pocketed $1 million and then got out on $2 million bail.
Harriet, it's really interesting when you say these things. It just gives me a chill. It really does. It gives,
yes.
It is so mind boggling, and we have to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And right now what I think we're going to do is we're going to take a little bit of a musical break. And the song I'm going to be playing is Women Rock the World, because, as you know, we have a woman's vice president. By the way, where do you think women are? What impact has this had on women? Do you think it's elevated us a little bit more? I mean, what is going to be? I mean, I just found out for the communications portion in Washington, D.C., Biden just has an all-woman communications team.
He does, and I think that's thrilling to some and threatening to others, like to Trump's followers. Because of the reasons I spelled out before. I think a lot of people are impressed, but also a lot of people look at politics and think, Kellyanne Conway was a woman. Does that mean she's progressive? Huckabee, his communications secretary, and all the pretty blondes who were his communications secretaries thereafter.
Yeah, it's really...
are women. So that being a woman isn't enough. You have to have a woman who stands up for the rights of all women.
Well,
and
that's
important.
I think we have a good representative with Kamala Harris. I mean, she,
yes, I think she is, and also she's a huge improvement. My goodness, over Pence, she's a huge improvement. And although she's had somewhat a spotty career, she has sometimes really come out for women and minorities
sometimes. Oh, definitely. Well, we're going to take a musical break, and the song I'm going to be playing, and I want to dedicate it to you and to all the women of the past and the women of the present and the women of the future, called Women Rock the World. And it's sung by one of my favorite artists, Earth Mama. And we have many strong women out there, and a special shout out to all those women who ran for election, for those who won, and for those whose shoulders we are all standing on.
Right.
We have come a long way, and we need to celebrate. And the most important thing, ladies, is you have to realize that you are independent, that you can think for yourself, that you can make your own decisions. So let's go ahead and listen to Women Rock the World, and when we come back, we'll continue this wonderful conversation with Dr. Harriet Fraud. Go ahead, Ken.
The power feminine gives birth to a song.
I'm going to add Kamala Harris to that. I'm going to add Dr. Harriet Fraud to that. I'm going to add the president of KBBF, Alicia Sanchez, to that, and just all the other women. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz, and with me on the phone from Massachusetts, right? Dr. Harriet Fraud, and we're going to continue our conversation. Are you with us, Harriet?
Sure am.
Okay, so, you know, did you hear that song just now, Women Rock the World?
I certainly did, and it is our time.
Yes, and
a lot of the most militant demonstrations are by women, so we can be proud, and the most militant unions are women.
Well, let's talk a little bit about President-elect Joe Biden, who has a huge challenge on his plate, kind of like Franklin Roosevelt when he won the election in 1933. What steps did Roosevelt take to help relieve the problem? I mean, we all hear the word New Deal, but what does that mean, and what did Frances Perkins have to do with it?
Well, Frances Perkins was the first woman to be a Secretary of Labor, and she was a socialist, and she was outspoken, and the first, one of the most important things he did was that he said, okay, if the private sector won't employ people at decent wages, the government will, and was responsible for hiring 11 million workers. If that were proportional to the population we have now, then Biden would hire 22 million workers on things like the Civilian Conservation Corps to conserve our parklands and our monuments, the Work Progress Administration, to hire millions of jobs for the public sector, including artists and writers, and who would beautify our cities and create museums and murals, and the TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority, which created dams all along the river and sold very cheap electricity from a public electrical company, created Social Security at the height of a depression. He created Social Security so older people could get some income, which of course hasn't kept up with inflation, but it was an enormously important thing. Unemployment insurance, the Farm Recovery Act, the Industrial Recovery Act, which allowed unions to finally be recognized and empowered, also called the Wagner Act. There were so many things that he did that gave people a chance to get an honest wage. Now, he didn't only do that because he was a sweet guy. The Farm Recovery Act he passed because the Iowa militias and the militias in Nebraska and other states were hanging judges that condemned family farms. And there were pitched battles in the streets with the National Guard.
Well, Harriet,
And they went to auctions.
Question, where did he get the money?
Great question.
Where did he get the money?
The money was that he, since millions of Americans, were in the streets, organized by the Communist Party, the two socialist parties, and the CIO, the biggest union, and with the biggest union drive ever, and organized in part by socialists and communists, and in part by other people who were workers.
So it sounds like they were fearful that they didn't do something.
They had to do something.
Right. That
thousands were marching in the streets for jobs. So they were afraid of a revolution. And FDR could go to them because they were his buddies. He was very rich and from an old, rich family. He could say, you let me tax you 96.8% on any money you make, and otherwise you won't have any money. It'll be taken. And enough of them were scared. They went for it. And with those billions, he funded the programs. Now, of course, we could do that now. If you taxed people like Bezos, the richest man in the world who's always cheating his workers, and out of his $200 billion, you took $199 billion, you'd leave him with a billion. We could use that. That would fund a lot of programs here.
Poor baby. Oh. He'd only have $1 billion?
Yeah, or $500 million. Poor thing.
Wow. How does that happen that so much money gets into so few hands?
Yeah, it happens because capitalists get a big break. Look at Trump. He paid $750,000 on his taxes when he had $1 billion. You know, they can hire the tax lawyers. They can put their money in offshore accounts. And our government doesn't say to the Cayman Islands or wherever else, hand over that money or we invade. They're not going to go against the U.S. government.
So
they could do that all over the place.
So
get
like,
the money.
So like we're saying that Joe Biden, president-elect, really has a challenge ahead of him.
Of course they could. It's a question of saying, okay, I am going to stand up for the mass of people in the United States rather than those rich people who pay for my campaign. And I will count on the millions of American people who are benefited and supportive to send me their little checks. That's what Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez's funds come from, the people she actually represents.
Well, Harriet, I have to represent this radio station, and we're just at the end. We're at the end of this wonderful, wonderful conversation. It just goes by so quick. So I'm going to have to, have you on again once he's sworn in and once things are kind of settled down and see how we're doing and if we're making any improvements. And from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you. Would you like to give anybody a website or a way they can get a hold of you?
Yes. Email me at hrod.com, and I would encourage them to listen to the podcast, Capitalism Hits Home, or It's Not Just in Your Head.
I like that. It's not just in your head. Well, Dr. Yes. Harriet Fraud, thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on the show and for giving
us... Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really... love your show.
But you know, it's interesting. Time goes by really, really quick. So let's stay on the phone with me, Harry, while I end it. Well,
sure.
That's it for our show. A special thank you to Dr. Harriet Fraud, who is the psychotherapist and hypnotherapist in private practice in New York City. And just amazing, all the information that she gave us. I mean, it's... There's so much to think about and so much to do and so many different ways to get involved. You know what I'm saying? And a reminder, tell your friends, Women's Spaces will be aired again tonight at 11 p.m. I'm so excited I get to listen to my own program. Also, I'm available for speaking engagements. And if you have any announcements, boy, our throats, you'd like to have on the air, do not hesitate to email me at elaine@womenspaces.com. And I want to remind all my folks, it's very important. Our children are the future, and we must never lose sight of that. And everything we do is an investment in our future. If we don't invest, we don't have a future. If we invest, we will have a good one. Anyway, this is Elaine B. Holtz. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
She's someone to pursue. She's patient and she's waiting, and she'll take you home now. The woman in your life, she can wait so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you. Because the woman in your life.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, November 30th, 2020.